Today, I am here with Peter Nolan, a professional knife sharpener out of Nova Scotia, Canada. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. Good. Thanks for calling.
All right, now, to start us off, can you briefly explain what sharp really means?
Well, sharp just means that, you know, when we to sharpen a knife, we have to bring both sides of the knife, side A and side B, together at the apex of the knife, and create a primary edge, the sharp part of the knife, basically, which we call the primary edge. So sharp just means doing that as precisely as humanly possible. So I do all my knife sharpening by hand on Japanese water stones, but there are gadgets you can get. There are devices called like the Edge Pro and things like that that will make it more precise. But sometimes that little bit of imprecision from the human touches makes it even sharp, as a matter of fact.
Could you go into why that is?
No, because by doing it completely by hand, we can manipulate and we can adjust things as on the fly.
Gotcha.
So if we're using something as a one of these, which are terrific devices, by the way, they're great. I've got an Edge Pro myself, but there's no, it forces you to select an angle of your choice. And you're sharpening the knives at the given angle that you've selected.
Gotcha.
You're locked into it. Now, if you're doing it by hand, you can adjust things on the fly. There might be something that you might have to, you know, switch around a bit to make make it your own edge, sort of thing. So.
Okay. And how long have you been sharpening knives, and how did you get started?
I'd say I started about 40 years ago. I saw my dad doing it. Like we've all done. We've all seen our dad or grandfathers or an elder sharpening, and then it was all with oil stone, which is a whetstone, of course. But and I don't think I saw him sharpening knives. It was always his tools, and it wasn't something that he did because he enjoys sharpening. It was just something. It was like mowing the lawn.
Right.
He had to get it sharp.
It was just a chore.
Right. It was a chore. So I saw him doing that, and I'll never forget it. It was just something that stuck with me, and ever since then, I have to learn how to do this. And this is back when I was 18, and I'm 60 years old now. So I'm pretty sure the first 25 years was all trial and error and just really just learning things. I just making mistakes and learning from them.
Gotcha. And on that learning curve, have you found certain principles, feel free to get philosophical, on how to get better or kind of how you guided your journey into it?
Definitely. Yep. And I'm just producing right now with Knife Planet a series on this. Basically a sharpening school, you know, for novices, how to get started and going from a novice to accomplish sharpening. And one of the things that I've come to realize over the last maybe 7 or 8 years was that it's not just the physical, there's much more to knife sharpening. If you want there to be more to it than just the physical motion of drawing a knife, an edge of a knife over a stone. There's a lot of emotional feedback that can be drawn in, and there's a lot of synergy that develops between you, the water stone. And I know this can sound a little corny too, but you just get immersed into this world. If you let it, taking a knife that's very dull, you've got this beautiful water stone and you're all alone and there's no one else bugging you and it's just you and the stone. And every knife is a challenge. Every night you overcome a challenge. You're used to this sense of pride and satisfaction, and also you're making the knife sharp. So as for being important, yes, it's important to develop a skill, of course, and learn and practice and do that. But you have to have a passion for it too.
Right.
If you've got passion for it, if you're driven towards it, it's like everything else you do in life, every other skill, like playing the guitar, for example. If you want to do it, if you want to develop this skill and passion, you're going to make better, sharper knives. I know I sure do, that's for sure. There's a lot more to it than just like I said. There's the emotional part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the mental attitude that you have to adopt. And then there's the physical part. And you also have to decide, you know, you're just going to be a casual sharpener. It's just something that you're doing just because your job entails sharp knives and you don't really care. You know, there's people who just do it. They don't really care about it too much. They just want
They're getting it for the food on the table.
This is what they have to do. But I feel sorry for them. I mean, I'd be miserable if I was like that.
Right.
After thousands and thousands of knives. I still get excited over every single knife I get that gets to me and that I get to sharpen.
And why do you think that is? Because, like you said, you've done thousands of knives. It seems like over a certain amount of time, you'd burn out from it.
I know. Over a certain amount of time, I burn out from everything else. There are other things I burn out for. Well, you know, going to the gym or things like this. You know, playing the guitar. I get tired of it. But for knife sharpening, I don't know what it is. It's just an obsession. I think what it is that because there's no peaking. There's no summit to reach when you're sharpening a knife. You set your own standards. You work at your own pace. 8 years ago, I was making knives sharper than I thought possible. Mm-hmm. When I think of it now, those knives weren't even, they pale in comparison to the knives I can make now. And now, so I wonder what, in 10 years from now, where will it be?
Right.
If you let yourself get to that stage where there's always something more to learn, most of the time, a lot of times, the only thing that's stopping you from getting improving is your ego.
Gotcha.
If you think that you've got it, nobody can teach me anything, your journey's over, basically. My ego's never gotten in my way. I've always asked people questions and anybody. I'm learning something new all the time.
It's like if you're at the top of the, if you think you're at the top of the mountain, you're not going to go any higher.
Right. You're done. So I'm pretty sure that even master knife sharpeners in Japan, for example, I'm pretty sure they just become better master knife sharpeners.
Gotcha.
There's only so much we can learn, but because what I have to learn, I don't know what it is. When you start off, you don't know what. When I first started sharpening a knife, the only thing I cared about was making the knife sharp. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about thinning and scratch patterns and all those other things that come into play later on in your life. I didn't know about those. So I don't know what lies ahead. Mm-hmm. I just know that there's something that I will learn. You know, I will learn more, for sure.
Is there a reason why, I know I was looking at your website and you say specifically that you only work on kitchen knives. Why do you focus on only those?
Just knives, because the only reason I say that, because I get a lot of questions about, do you do ice augers? Do you do lawnmower blades? That type of thing. So if I should change that, because I do any knife.
Like it may have been
hunting knives, tactical knives, the knives I see you making, those type of things, you know, which are freaking awesome, by the way. That type of thing. Just knives. I don't do skates and all the questions. Yeah. I'm getting emails all the time. Do you sharpen skates? Do you do this? So. Right. I guess that's what I mean. Just knives.
Could you give a quick overview on the different types of methods people use for knife sharpening? Because I know you use Japanese water stones mostly. Some people use grinders. They'll use oil stones. Can you give an overview of what they do and why you focus on yours?
My focus is on wet stones. So wet stones, as we know, are oil stones and water stones. The lubric ones lubricated with oil, ones with water. I started on oil stones 40 years ago, because I didn't even know about Japanese water stones at the time. What we need to do when we sharpen a knife that's dull, the knife is dull because the primary edge has failed. The metal has folded over, it's become fatigued. Mm-hmm. So what we do as sharpeners, and I know you know this, is that we're just removing that fatigued metal and we expose the fresh steel underneath.
Right.
Reform that primary edge as best of our ability. There's lots of different ways to do that. On water stones, on oil stones. There's some people do it with belts, with belt sanders. Some people use other paper wheels, which I've never seen, but there's other grinders type of thing as well. I'm pretty sure, and I know that they can make the knives very sharp doing that. It's just, they just have a skill in that. It's just something that doesn't interest me. I have a belt sander with special sharpening belts, and I've tried sharpening with it. I can get it sharp, but there's no joy to it for me. It's just, I don't get anything out of it. I use it for repairs. That's the only reason I use it for, tip repairs and things like that. But to sharpen a knife, I know I can get it really sharp. I don't get anything from it. I don't get no joy from that at all. Some people do. I've seen knives from the people have sharpened on belts, and they're fantastic. It's just not what I'm into.
When you first got into Japanese water stones, what was that journey like? And how would you describe a Japanese water stone?
It was fantastic. I'm probably a life-changing event. I'd been into oil stones, so I was sharpening knives The thing with oil stones is basically a coarse and fine type of thing. Mm-hmm. With Japanese water stones, as far as I know anyway, that there's a whole much of more. You can go right from 60 grit up to 30,000 grit with a hundred different, with all sorts of different levels of refinement available in between that. I was in New York and I walked into a kitchen store that sold Japanese water stones. Mm-hmm. 4 hours later, and I'm not exaggerating, I was in there for 4 hours after meeting the manager and sharpening knives together. He's the one who introduced me to a brand of water stone called Chapman Glass. Mm-hmm. I'd heard about these, but I'd never had the opportunity to sharpen them. And he allowed me to, we sharpened a $1,000 knife together. Wow. Using these water stones. So it just opened up a whole different, it was another part of the sharpening journey. You know, what is a sharpening journey? We always hear this. For me, it's a series of stepping stones. You know, you stop at a stepping stone, you learn how to sharpen a knife. You learn how to flatten a water stone. They're all different stepping stones. They're all different learning pieces, you know? So the Japanese water stone became this was the thing that I was missing, because there's a lot of tactile feedback when you use a water stone. Like one of the favorite water stones that everybody loves is called the Nanawa Chisera or Nanawa Professional. I know you know this, Caleb, but Nanawa Chisera used to be, now they've become Nanawa Professional 1,000 grit water stone.
Actually, I haven't heard much of that, but yeah.
I regard this by many sharpeners. It's all over the world. It's the best, one of the best Japanese synthetic water stones that you can buy. Mm-hmm. These stones wear out. They're abrasives, and as you use them, they wear out. And I can't imagine not having one. They feel, there's a certain feel, a feedback that they provide as you sharpen. So, and it adds to the joy. It adds to all the zen. You get into this world of zen where you're just into it, you know? Mm-hmm. When you're into this zone, that adds to it. And water stones do that for me.
Right.
Obviously, they get the knives sharp. They do their job, but there's something about them too.
Yeah. And that's something where I noticed I started using water stones maybe 2 years ago. And before that, I just can't get into the oil stones. They just feel dirty and gunky to me. But the water
That's another part of it.
Yeah.
There is another part of that. And there was a very well-known book called The Razor Edge Book of Sharpening. I might have that wrong, but it's pretty close. This was written back in the 60s. The man who wrote it, he went into the differences between oil stones and water stones and things mm-hmm. like that. And I'm pretty sure that it came out, that the water stones came out as the preferred method to sharpen, because as you said, and I feel the same way, they're just, well, they're oil. You need oil, right? First of all, they smell different. There's just something that you're limited, and you're really limited into your areas of refinement with oil stones. I know people can sharpen knives on an oil stone. I've done it myself. It works.
Right.
But there's got to be more to it than that. And to me, the only thing that delivers what I need personally is Japanese water stones.
Right. Now, can you go into the difference between a synthetic and a natural stone?
So a synthetic stone, I mean, now listen, I'm no expert in natural stones. I have probably 60, 70 synthetic stones. I only have a couple natural stones. Synthetic stones are made in a factory, like they're sintered, it's called, is it? There's different binding agents put into it. They're baked. So you come out with this brick.
Right.
That's an abrasive that we all use to sharpen a knife. On the other hand, natural water stone are mined from caves. I don't know if there's any active caves anymore, that I think they've all, maybe not, but most of them have been stripped of all the actual natural stones. So this, though, and we're talking 800 years ago, they started doing this when the old samurais were sharpening their swords on the natural stones. So a natural stone is not man-made. It's petrified stone that could be millions and 70 million years old, really, you know, really, really, really old, that they've taken a piece of rock out of a cave and they formed it into a synthetic stone. They've made it into an 8x3 brick, basically. Mm-hmm. What does it mean when you sharpen? What does it do to you? Well, this is what I found. We can get back into the non-physical aspect of it. just the fact that you're using something traditional mm-hmm. from Japan that was mined out of a cave, and there's that part of it too. That's pretty cool. You know, so there's that part of it. And then there's the smell. And believe it or not, my favorite part of using a natural water stone is the way they smell. And my friend, a mentor, basically John Broidus, told me that in Japan they call it the smell of the earth. It's this incredible smell that you get from this water stone, this natural stone that you don't get with synthetic stones.
Gotcha.
They're not measured in specific grit. So in synthetic stones, you can get 320 grit, 500 grit, 8,000 grit. So there's different particle sizes of the particles that created to use to make the stone. And natural stones, it's not like that. There's a density to the stones. They're measuring density, and there's a grit equivalency, and it could be from 8 to 12,000 grit.
Wow.
They're very popular for raised straight razors, by the way, probably more so than knives. I only use them on knives with a lot of carbon in them, the handmade Japanese knives. And the only stones I have are finishing stones. I start off with a synthetic stone, you know, coarse, medium, and I finish off on the natural stone.
Gotcha.
So does it make the knife sharper? Because I've heard other people talk about them, and I said, okay, they're going to bring you to a different level of sharpness. It does not happen for me. And I can honestly tell you that some of the sharpest knives I've ever seen, and I have seen probably some of the sharpest knives in the world, brand new, built and sharpened by masters that never touched a natural stone. Sharpeners like myself and people who are obsessed with it, it's never sharp enough for us. And unless you can perform eye surgery with your knife, it's probably not sharp enough.
Right, but
in fact, it really is. You know, it really is sharp. It's sharp enough. So we're just very picky and fussy about it.
Gotcha.
So when I used a natural stone, yes, it was absolutely fantastic. Did it bring it to a different level? No. Gotcha. I've already reached that with other synthetic stones. So they're great to have. They're not like a, it's like a hobby type of thing. They're very nice and wonderful to use, but I don't rely on them to make my knife sharp.
Gotcha. So they're not the magical, no knife is as sharp as one by this stone.
Listen, that's just my experience.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm sure there are people out there in Japan or other parts of anywhere who maybe thrive on natural stones or have more experience with them and do believe, and maybe rightly so, that you're not going to get it does get to a different level. I haven't experienced that myself.
Okay. Now, what is one technique that you found that really changed your method of sharpening? Because I know earlier you mentioned something like scratch patterns. I bought the video course from Carter Cullery on sharpening knives, and he mentioned that you can do back and forth in the same way, so you constantly have the same scratch pattern. I know everybody's grandfather does figure eight patterns or back and forth, maybe up one angle, down the other. Do you have a favorite way?
Definitely. And listen, this is something I struggle with for years, finding a technique. And it's important to establish a technique, own the technique, and then just get down to the practice. There's four pillars Peter Nowlin's philosophy consists of four pillars. There's passion, practice, patience, and persistence. That's what it's all about. So yes, and I did struggle with, and I've seen Murray Carter's videos. Yeah, great stuff. And scratch patterns is something I mentioned that doesn't really involve the technique. So for me, and I've made videos on this I like John Broidus' videos. To me, I always stand up when I sharpen for one thing, and I use what's called a trailing stroke. So I am trailing stroke. This means I'm pushing the knife away from me. There's edge trailing and edge leading. So I'm applying pressure as I push the knife away from me. The most important thing I ever learned about sharpening, when I first started, let's just forget the first 30 years. We'll call that trial and error.
Gotcha.
So 10 years ago when I became the sharpening sickness, as I call it, took over, I learned about burr formation and burr removal. And so when do you switch from one stone to a different? How do you know when to do that? All the knives I ever sharpen are dull anyway. So I always start in the core stone and move up. And mm-hmm. when do you know when to move? And when I was in New York at the same time, I happened to, when I bought those water stones and I took them back to my hotel, I was in the lobby just fondling my brand new water stones and looking at them and thinking, these are cool. I can't wait to get home and try them out. And this little old man, a Japanese man, came over, and he couldn't speak English, and I couldn't speak Japanese. And before you know it, within 5 minutes, I had gone into the kitchen, asked the chef if I could get a knife, sharpen it for him, because the little old man that mentioned to me that emotion towards me that, you know, listen, mm-hmm. sharpeners, we all speak the same language. You know, so I knew right away that he knew what he was talking about. He was saying to me, go get a knife and let's play with these water stones. One of the things he taught me, and just it was just by feel and mm-hmm. looking and expressions on his face, was about pressure. Before, when I first started sharpening, I thought, I start on a coarse stone. When I raise the burr, I basically do my best to remove it as best I can, and then I move to a different stone. Mm-hmm. Well, he changed that for me, and I've since changed it completely. Is that when I was going to, I started on a 500 grit shaft and glass stone to sharpen this knife that was unbelievably dull from the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I was going to change, and he stopped me. And I could just tell the way you motion that just stay with it, but you reduce your pressure. And so what I did was I formed a burr. You only form a burr once on a knife on both sides. And after that, it's all this burr form, burr on, burr off. It's all about burr removal and cleaning the edge after that. I learned from him about establishing different levels of pressure and lingering and staying on that first coarse stone. I've since done that for years, and I've even made a video on it. I personally now use 4 levels of pressure when I sharpen. I've made a video on it demonstrating different levels of pressure. And John Broider, who's my favorite sharpener, has actually added this video to his playlist. So all of this is basically making sure the edge is as clean as possible on every single stone. When I say I use 4 levels of pressure, it's only on the first water stone. That's on after the burr is formed. Then I go back down to 3 levels of pressure. So basically it's heavy pressure to get started. Mm-hmm. It's you and the stone working together. Then it's just reducing that by half and then half again. And just by the end of it, you just vary extremely light pressure and refining the edge. So lingering, staying on that coarse stone, really the sharpest knives I've ever produced in my life came after that. So.
Gotcha.
So that was a very cool moment. And I found out later when I went back to that store, they told me that this man was a master knife sharpener from Japan. He'd been visiting. He was 67 years old, and he'd been sharpening knives since he was 15.
Wow.
And he was going back to Japan to see his master. I'd like to know who the master is. If he's not the master, how good is this other guy? You know. So it puts things in perspective. This is all about
your experience. It really does.
Here's a guy who's 15, he's 67. And now he's still not satisfied that he has learned everything. That's the beauty of sharpening knives. You just keep going.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Because it's one of those things that until you get to one atom thick, you can always get sharper, it feels like. There's always one higher level to go.
Right. And listen, you know, say I was making knives sharp, you know, 10 years ago, sharper than most people have seen. You're just doing this for yourself.
Right.
And I'm not saying just me, most sharpeners get to this stage. You're just testing yourself. You're just setting your, you're trying to surpass your own standards. I've never had a complaint since I've opened up my business, never had a complaint because people are they're used to dealing with the sharp, let's face it, the sharpest knife that most people have ever seen is the one they bought from the store.
Yeah. That's
true. You know, the day they brought it home. But in fact, that's often not that sharp.
Right.
We can go much further than that. Different levels of sharpness.
Do you have a way of measuring sharpness? Because I the bladesmithing world, they have, there's sharp, there's hair shaving sharp, then they'll say scary sharp. That's all I've ever heard.
You see all these videos of people slicing tomatoes without holding the tomato and doing these miraculous. I'm not saying that they don't indicate a level of skill that the person's achieved to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't like those anymore because for novices, and I'm getting off track a little bit, but I think this is important.
No, no, please continue, yeah.
Novices, and I teach sharpening, so when they see that, they think, okay, if I can't do that, if I can't slice that tomato impossibly thin without holding the tomato, then I'm doing something wrong. That's not the case at all. And so it can be overwhelming and deceiving to people trying to learn how to sharpen a knife. With novices, all they need to do is establish the technique and just try to get the knife a little sharper than it was a week ago or the day before. They never have to be able to do those things. That'll come maybe 10 years away from down the road. Mm-hmm. Or it's not something because it can strip off layers of confidence when you see that, when they're trying to sharpen a knife and they can't do that because they're going to try it because they've seen somebody do it, but they don't know that maybe that took him 20 tries to do that on the video. Maybe it took him 10 years to be able to get to that stage. Again, I'm not putting people down who've done those, but I do it myself. I've done that. I've been there, done all that. But that's the reason I'm not too fussy about it. But
gotcha.
Caleb, I forget the first question, the original question, what you asked me about. So anyway, I got off track there, but I think that was important.
All right, no, that answers it. I was asking kind of how the standards of it. So it's interesting. Go ahead.
When I sharpen a knife, and before I've finished it, when I'm done with it, I just feel the edge. I can feel the edge with my three fingers, pads of my fingers. And if it just grabs my fingers, it grabs the pads of my fingertips, I know it's sharp. I've gone through hundreds of telephone books. Telephone book paper is a good test. Not photocopier paper. That's too thick. That's not a real test. So the thinnest paper you can get, if it slices through that, it's sharp. Arm hair, shaving, and done all that too. Yeah.
Gotcha. And it's interesting, you seem to have, your approach is more of get every knife a little sharper than the last time or just a little bit better and not constantly thinking, okay, here's a big goal. I'm going to go hit that goal and then I'm done.
Exactly. If this is, say, talking to my fellow next, and he just wants to learn how to sharpen knives and he was just starting off. First of all, the most important thing is to establish and to build muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
Muscle memory, and I think Mary Carter said you need to sharpen 20 knives to build muscle memory. So you sharpen your own knife 20 times. But first of all, you need to develop a technique. You need to develop a space where you can go sharpen so that every time you go down, you develop a pattern. It's a series of patterns.
Right.
Every time I pick the knife up, I'm in the exact same spot. I hold the knife the same way. I start at the exact same spot. I start sharpening the knife at the tip, on the bottom of the stone, you know, whatever. I've owned that, and that's the way I do it. So I don't have to think about anything else. I don't have to think about, okay, how am I going to hold a knife? Those are all things that novices they learn over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to develop muscle memory. Muscle memory leads to consistency, and consistency opens the doors to sharpness heaven. When you're consistent and not just being able to hold an angle, whether it's 15 or 20 or 18 degrees, it's important to be able to hold that angle. Whatever your personal sharpening angle is, you need to develop muscle memory so that you can hold it. And it's not just that. You need to, whatever you do on one side of the knife, you need to do it on the other side. So equalize the time on side A and side B.
Switching gears and going back to the stones is, I noticed you said that you have many, many stones. How do you just kind of buy them over time? Where do you get these? And how do you tell that, oh, this is something that I want to get?
So when I started knife sharpening, there was no YouTube. There was no nothing. So I didn't know anything. I just knew what my dad gave me. That's what I had. I thought I had the only water oil stones in the world, for I knew. You know, it didn't matter. So, but now, when people are exposed to social media and YouTube and forums and things like that, and we hear about certain brands of stones, the brands of stones that I love and I use every day are the Nanawa, Shapton Professional, Shapton Glass, and there's a different, some other different types of brands in there, Kitayama, for example, that just have one specific stone that I like. So you start to hear about these stones. You're hearing about people using them all the time. You get curious, and then, okay, then these must be good. Then you try them out, and then you find out that they are good. I'm in Canada, so for me to buy, now there's a site in the United States called Chef Knives to Go, which is absolutely fantastic, by the way. I've bought from him several times. But for Canadians, it's tough because of the Canadian dollar and the shipping costs. It pretty much doubles. Anything you see on that site, you got to double it.
Gotcha.
So I purchased from places in Canada, Paul's Finest and Fender Hands type of thing. I get all my favorite waterstones from them.
Gotcha. Now, one other interesting thing is a lot of times you get knives with either chips in the blades or broken tips or bent tips. Do you have a favorite method of repairing these?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. When I first started my business, I thought, okay, all I need to do is sharpen a knife. Well, I think the first knife I had to sharpen professionally was at a broken tip. Getting the knife sharp for me now is the easy part. It's how do you deal with all the repairs and refinishings and things like that. So a lot of knives, especially handmade Japanese knives, because of the hardness, they're prone to chipping. Okay. Mm-hmm. So little, and I don't mean major chips that you can stick a nickel into or anything like that, but little tiny chips.
Right.
That perfect edge when you start is no longer perfect. So what you need to do, and again, there's videos and there's ways to do it. For small chips, this is where the beauty of coarse waterstones come into play. You can just sharpen your knife and ignore the chips. And the grinding, the abrasive powers of those stones will just remove those chips. As you sharpen, they'll become smaller and smaller and go. However, if the chips are more significant, what I do is, for example, a Chapman Glass 500 is a beautiful stone for repairing chips because it's very hard and it's nice. Most knives in the world are sharpened between 15 and 20 degrees. Most knives. Now, the dream knives, the Japanese, the Masakage and things like that, they're all sharpened about 12 degrees. So a couple of different angles that you have to concern yourself with.
Gotcha.
So if you can picture holding a knife at, say, 15 degrees to sharpen it, that's what you do. However, if that same knife had chips in it, I would hold the knife at almost 90 degrees to the stone, about 85 degrees. So I'm basically holding the knife straight up and down, as if I was going to embed the blade into the stone. The broken edge of the blade over the stone, back and forth, the same method, just at a different angle, a much more obtuse angle, and I'm wearing the metal away from the primary edge until the holes disappear, basically.
Gotcha.
Right? So you've got to remove metal up to the bottom of that hole, then I move back down to my sharpening angle.
Gotcha.
And sharpen it. Okay? So that's it. Now, for bad chips, beg your pardon? Yes, you're grinding away the edge. If for bad tip, I personally use a belt sander for major tip repair because I can actually do a better job.
Right.
I find I can do it better. That's all. So that's why. And it's more efficient. Some of the knives I get, $30 knives that have been, they're $30 knives that are 30 years old and have never been sharpened. To do all the repair work on a coarse stone is hard on the stone as well. So I can do it more efficiently and just as well or better on a belt sander. I'll do that. But then I always go back to the stone to finish it off anyway. I never turn a knife over to its owner unless it's touched waterstones.
Now, I've just got a couple more questions before we finish up. And you mentioned that you do a lot of sharpening,
videos,
tutoring, and videos. Could you tell us what those consist of?
A company called Knife Planet. It's a website. Contacted me and asked me to do a video, an interview, sort of like we're doing, but it was by email. Men especially, they all have this primal urge, and I've written this article on this, a primal urge to sharpen a knife. Now, some people get the urge and never do it. Some people do it once or blah, whatever. And people at the other end of the extreme, like me, who just obsess over it.
Right.
But I felt it my responsibility because I write a blog. I keep a blog as well that I talk about knife sharpening. So a lot of people from all over the world have been asking me questions. I sort of felt it my responsibility. Okay, maybe I can do a video. It's easier to see a video than you know, now it's not easier to make the video. It's a lot harder than I thought it would be to talk and sharpen at the same time. But so then I got into this, okay, how do you get started? And so I've made a videos for starting just the basic first time ever touching a knife to a Waterstone, how to do it, a video on the levels of pressure and things like that. And all those videos are on my website, and that's been published by Knife Planet as well. Now I started this other series that we're going to start. I'm doing all the videos. Knife Planet does all the editing type of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like going to sharpening school. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a sharpening school? You go to school and you learn how to sharpen a knife. Well, I'm going to do that to the best of my ability anyway, via articles with accompanying videos. And the first video will be much like we're talking right now about, you know, all the mistakes I've made. I'm pretty sure I've probably made more mistakes than anybody else there is because I'm old. So I started to make my mistakes 40 years ago. And the goal of the videos is to just to educate, enlighten people, and maybe make different choices than I made, make the right choices. And it's always fun to watch some videos. Now, listen to this. There's hundreds and hundreds of videos. Listen, my wife, I could tell my wife how to sharpen a knife and she could go make a video on it. So,
right.
You know, you've got to have some sense. Some videos are good. Most are just mediocre. There's some really great ones out there.
And
you can learn from them for sure.
Okay. I'll definitely be putting the links to that in the show notes on the page.
Yeah. That's all on my, all the videos are linked to them all on my website. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. And now for the final question is, what do you have your eye on right now that you're planning on learning new, or what's your new discovery?
I would say one of the best things that ever happened to me recently, and I'm thinking within the last month, there's a store in Canada that sells Japanese knives called Knifeware.
Mm-hmm.
The president of Knifeware, Mr. Kevin Kent, a man I greatly admire, never met, but I will someday, he's gone through great lengths to educate people, Canadians, bring Japanese knives to Canada, and we're finally seeing these beautiful knives, and not just that. Who made them? Who made the knives and what they're going through? So it's really given us, me especially, an appreciation for this, for Japanese knives and the people who make Japanese knives.
Mm, yeah.
What was really cool about it was that Mr. Kent and I have been talking back and forth by email for quite a while, and he said, why don't you send me some knives? So he sent me three knives to sharpen of his own personal knives. I sharpened them and sent them back with the goal of getting constructive criticism from somebody who knows. He's best friends with one of the best sharpeners in the world. So this man knows edges, and I know that if he's going to see my knives, and I asked him, do you make sure you're completely honest? I didn't want him to say, well, Pete, listen, looks like you got everything covered, and they're fantastic. I didn't want to hear that. I want to hear, and this is what I'm talking about, your ego. If you can drop your ego and not let that get in the way, you can learn. So again, I didn't have any ego. I said, yep, let me have it. So one of the things we talked about was thinning. So there was no problem getting knife sharp. That wasn't, the knives are sharp. So except there was a couple of tips. So the tips of knives are tricky to sharpen. Again, we're talking eye surgery level of sharpness here. So that was one area I concentrated on. But thinning knives, again, is another aspect of a knife sharpening that some people find it easy, some people find it difficult. I think it's difficult to do it properly. It's a challenge. One of the things he said I could improve upon was thinning. So when he told me that, well, I went nuts. I just went crazy, and I've thinned hundreds of knives since. And it basically provided an extra layers of confidence for me.
Right.
You know, so now I've overcome that. If that's the only thing he found in the tip sharpening was it, then that's something for me to work on.
All right.
And that was fantastic for me. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. This has been an amazing interview. Do you have a website where people can come see your stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. If they just Google Peter Mallon knife sharpening, they'll find it. But it's halifaxknifesharpening.com. So Halifax is a city where I live in Nova Scotia. So it's halifaxknifesharpening.com.
All right. Awesome. I'll put that in the show notes, and I'll also be linking to the different companies that you mentioned and some other resources. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you, Caleb.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.